So, do you like to try new vegetable varieties? Up next, we're going to take a look at what's trending with our guest, Erwin Goldman. Good to have him back with us. He's professor, interim senior associate dean in the College of Ag and Life Sciences, and of course, a professor in the Department of Plant and Agrosystem Sciences at UW-Madison. And his research focuses on vegetable breeding and genetics. He loves beets. He does a lot of work in that area, but he also he likes carrots and he likes onions too. So he works in those areas as well. So I want to ask him about some of his research in those areas. But wait, what questions do you have about vegetable varieties? Are you looking for one that will do well in your garden? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234, or you could send us an email to talk@wpr.org. Erwin, good to have you back.
It's so great to be here, Larry. Thank you.
Do you know? I wonder about trends in, you know, we can talk about trends in production, but what about trends in consumption, vegetable consumption?
It's a great question, Larry. You know, I'm seeing a lot of interest in diversifying the type of variety that consumers are interested in. So, for example, I don't know how many decades we all ate orange carrots and we thought that was the only carrot.
Yeah.
But now purple carrots and yellow carrots and even red carrots are easily found and of great interest to consumers. Mm-hmm. Purple broccoli, orange cauliflower. All of these things, I think, represent a trend in visual diversity in the marketplace that consumers are interested in.
I love that too, because I think it encourages people to eat more vegetables.
Absolutely. I mean, we eat with our eyes.
Yeah.
And because of that, plant breeders have exploited the color variations that are out there. These are natural variations. Mm-hmm. So these aren't genetically engineered in any way. But plant breeders went back to the germplasm and brought in those colors and has really, I think, diversified the marketplace.
I would definitely agree with you on that. And that is a big change. Fred in Menominee has a question for you about germination. Let's
sure.
go there. Hi, Fred.
Well, hi. Say, we've been using Young Seeds for many, many years.
Mm-hmm. It's a great company.
Yeah, and always had good germination. This year, our carrots, our beets, especially the beets, and our squashes, and our corn, they just aren't germinating like they usually do.
Hmm.
I'm an organic gardener, so mm-hmm. I mulch things, et cetera, et cetera. And, the beets, I planted a whole row of beets in a raised bed, so it's only about 6 foot long. But I've got something like 5 beets in that whole row.
Hmm. I would expect that the germination percentage on those seeds you bought is quite high. And I know that the company, I'm sure, stands by the products that they sell. I'm wondering if maybe you have a hard soil, in other words, a hard pan or a hard covering of the soil. Sometimes beets, they just don't push through the crust very well. Is it possible that you have a crust there?
It's sandy soil, mm-hmm. and it started when I moved here 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The garden was basically construction sand.
Hmm.
I mean,
I've
thrown organic stuff in there, so there's nothing hard about it.
Okay. That's curious. Did you dig down and look at the seed balls and see what they look like?
There was nothing left. So do I have an invasive?
Oh,
that
animal?
Could be.
Yeah, if you couldn't find, so you couldn't find the seed ball at all?
No.
Okay. Well, then I would suspect that something happened there with the seed. Maybe it got washed away, or in a storm, or an animal
eaten
dug
by
it
something.
Up. Yeah, because your soil, they should push right through that. And germination, usually, most of that seed should germinate at least 80%, 85%. So I'm wondering if perhaps, did you notice if the seeds were gone with some of your other crops, like your carrots?
The carrots germinated nicely.
It's have you still got some of those seeds left?
Oh yeah.
You might put some in some little pots. And
yep. Take a paper towel or two, wet it. Put the seeds in the paper towel and just keep it close to moisture, maybe in a cup, and see how they germinate.
Yeah, put 10 seeds in there, and you ought to be 8 of them ought to germinate at least, I would think. I'd try that, and of course, as you say, Young's is going to honor. If there was something wrong, they would certainly replace seeds.
That would be my guess.
Thanks, Fred. Chuck in West Salem. Hi, Chuck.
Hi. This year I experimented with buying something called honey sugar snap peas. And the major difference I'm told is that it's going to have yellow pods instead of green. But I was wondering if there are other characteristics of it that I'm unaware of. I've seen blooms, but I haven't seen any pods yet. Should I anticipate that they'll be sweeter, or are they as productive? Do you have any experience with honey sugar snaps?
I don't. I don't know the variety, but the name suggests to me that they are marketed for sweetness, and that's definitely one of the major trends that I'm seeing is the sort of diversification of flavor and sweetness and sugar in the marketplace. But I don't know the variety myself. Larry, do you know it?
No, I don't.
So I wish you all the best with it, but it sounds, hopefully it'll be tasty.
Good luck, Chuck. Thank you. Madison, who is in the vehicle, I believe. Madison, hi.
Hi there. Yes, I'm just passing through. I enjoy your show. Thanks for educating.
Oh, thanks for joining in. What's on your mind?
I'm looking to start growing a little bit of a garden just in some plant beds on my deck. And I was wondering what I could start growing at this time of year.
Well, you can really produce a lot even now. We're still early enough in the season. You can grow all the way into October without any trouble. So I would suggest that all of the, many of the crops that you'd be interested in, probably you could grow beans, you could grow peas, you can still plant carrots, although we're kind of getting towards the end of the time when you'd want to plant carrots. But you could plant spinach, you could plant, different kinds of greens. I think it's probably a little late for big squash like pumpkins, but you could probably produce many of the vegetables that you'd be interested in. Are there particular crops that you'd like to see?
I just am trying to diversify my palate now, and I'm just wondering how to start gardening, as a beginner. So, the easiest things to grow together as well.
Well, greens are always a good thing to grow. I mean, the lettuces don't like the hot weather. You might want to wait a little bit and grow those into the fall. But greens, you might have a crop within 30 days. And so you can grow radishes. You can grow some short season crops and give yourself a little experience. That might be a nice thing to try. If you can get a hold of some transplants, you might be able to put tomatoes and peppers in your beds as well. And that may still do well for you this year.
Yeah. I was thinking about peppers. I mean, usually I wait later anyway for peppers because... If they got hit with a cold spot or something, you'll get great plants, but no peppers.
Right.
So, you'd be in the market. Madison, you got lots of opportunities there. If you go to the UW, I'm trying to think of what's coming to mind, bulletins. The University of Wisconsin-Madison Gardening Bulletins. Type that in.
Yeah, there's one on vegetable production.
There's one on vegetable production. Mm-hmm. The Learning Store, UW Learning Store. You're going to find out a whole bunch of tips right there. Mm-hmm. And stay listening to Garden Talk. We do it every Friday. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Let's see. Neva emailed that she has a lot of container plants. She heard she could start corn when it does take off, then start bean to climb the stalks, then start squash. Does that sound correct?
That's the three sisters, and that is that certainly predates our European-style agriculture. That's an indigenous production system that has been going for 10,000 years or more. And it's a beautiful way to go. I think the use of the corn stalk to support the beans makes sense. And then, of course, in a I wasn't thinking of in containers. In a field, the squash will do some weed suppression because they spread out. In containers, I think it's going to be a little more difficult because of the way the squash sort of trails out. But nevertheless, with one of our classes this in the spring semester, we did grow the three sisters in containers, and it does work very well. So I absolutely think that's going to work very well for her.
Matthew and Amberg, it's your turn. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. This actually, the last thing you were just speaking about really relates to what I'm doing. I'm doing the three sisters, and in with the beans, I've been mixing in what they call the Oregon Giant sugar snap peas, thinking that, you know, it's a legume, so maybe it'll still work. I had never heard of them before. The description sounded interesting, so I thought I would try them. I was just wondering if you're familiar with those and if you have any sort of advice as far as taking good care of them.
I mean, I've seen grown sugar snap peas and seen different kinds of them, and that absolutely makes sense in that kind of production system. I mean, you're not, instead of growing a dry bean, you're going to be growing something that you're going to eat when it's young and it's tender. You're just going to have to get in and pick those, but they're going to grow very well in that system. So I don't think there's any problem.
Yeah, I think you're good to go, Matthew. Thank you for calling. You can join in, too. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Talk at WPR.org. That's how you can email us. I'm Larry Mueller with Erwin Goldman, professor and interim senior associate dean in the College of Ag and Life Sciences and the Department of Plant and Agrosystem Sciences. Did I get that right?
It's Plant and Agroecosystem Sciences. I think you were probably right on, Larry. And that's the bringing together of two longtime traditional departments, agronomy and horticulture.
Yeah, right here on WPR News. Great to have you along for Garden Talk. Larry Mueller with my guest, Erwin Goldman, professor in the Department of Plant and Agroecosystem Sciences at UW-Madison. Great to have him with us today. Don in Oshkosh has a question for you. Erwin, let's go there. Hi, Don.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I am calling because I have a cabin in Jackson County, and when I go over there, Babcock, Wisconsin, which is a very small town, has a little stand where a woman sells, it's called honey-dipped sweet corn. And it's fresh, it's crispy, it's sweet, and I can't find it anywhere else, like near Oshkosh where I live. And I'm wondering if you've ever heard of the honey-dipped sweet corn.
Hmm. I don't know the variety, but we can do a little checking to see what we can find out. Larry, do you know the variety?
I don't know the variety. Okay. That's a brand new one to me, and it may be some new kind of marketing name for another one, but we can check on
that.
We'll
do a little checking. Haven't heard of it, but it sounds terrific.
Yeah, it does. And we'll see what we can come up with, but I want to talk a little bit about your work and your research. You know, your lab focuses on genetics of beets, carrots, and onions. And by the way, why those three?
Yeah.
I know you love beets.
Well, you know, those three crops have been historically important to the state of Wisconsin. Beets and carrots, of course, are canning crops, processing crops. So they get typically put in jars and cans or frozen product. And onions have always been a mainstay of the vegetable production of the state. And so my predecessor started working on those in the 1940s when he came to the university. And his goal was to turn those three crops into hybrid varieties. And there were hybrids in corn at the time, but there weren't hybrids in many of the vegetables. And so during his 40-year career, he did that, and I continued that work for the last 32 years. And we're breeding those crops to make higher performing varieties for farmers and consumers.
So it's pretty cool. I guess one that I wanted to focus on a little bit was the Badger Flame Beet.
Yeah.
How's that? I mean, that kind of created a huge amount of interest. That is a beautiful beet.
Well, thank you, Larry. We've been so pleased to see the reaction to it. And just going back in time, this goes back about 25 years or so, we wanted to diversify the varieties that were available to consumers because, as you know, the beets taste like dirt. They taste like soil. And it's one of the things actually I like about beets is the earthiness of them.
The geosmin,
the earth scent. And beets and spinach to some degree, chard, they all have a little earthiness to them. But when I would go around the state asking people about what they liked, many people would say, it just tastes like dirt to me. I just don't want it. So we spent a lot of time breeding. Nick Breitbach, I want to give Nick credit for this because he was my colleague. We worked on this for many years, selecting away from the earthiness. And Badger Flame and some of its cousins are beet varieties that have low earthiness, and you can taste the sugar. Beets are full of sucrose, and it's just sometimes hard to taste the sweetness when you're getting that hit of earthiness. So the Badger Flame has been people have had a nice response to it because you can eat it fresh. You can eat it like you eat a carrot. You can just peel it and taste it raw, and you get that, you get a little hint of the earthiness, but mostly sweetness.
Yeah, and is it readily available? I mean, seeds and so forth?
So seeds are available from at least three companies now that are selling them across the country, and they show up in grocery stores, although in Wisconsin it's been hit or miss. But on the East Coast in Boston, they've been showing up. They've been showing up at Wegmans Grocery, which is in the Northeast. And I think with each year, more stores are carrying them as they catch on. It just takes time for word of mouth to get around.
That whole business about the earthiness and so, if you take beets and grill them,
mm-hmm.
which we've talked about, I think, on the show before,
yeah.
They taste so good.
Right. You get all that sugar coming out, and it almost, right. It doesn't, you can taste the sweetness, right?
The Mad Dog and Merrill, the grilling buddies, did some grilling at my house once. We had a group of people there, and we had all these vegetables that they grilled, and there were beets in there. And this is when I first learned of this. And Mad Dog said, I'll bet you the beets go first. Well, they didn't go first, but once people tried one or two,
yep.
All the beets were gone.
Absolutely. they're like little, they're wonderful and they're beautiful. You know, they have that great red color and they're tasty. Yeah, so I think the sugar that's present is a real plus, but sometimes people just get turned off by the other things that are present in there, so you got to get rid of them.
Sherry in Oshkosh has something about or a question about beets, I think. Hi, Sherry.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So, first of all, thanks for taking my call. I love this show, all the iterations of it.
Thank you.
I have a problem with kidney stones, and so that's caused by oxalic acid.
Yes.
And I've been told that I cannot eat my two favorite vegetables with frequency, and I actually don't eat them at all because I'm not taking any chances. But they include beets and sweet potatoes.
Right.
The spinach I can do without. Mm-hmm. Is there any chance that they could be bred to not have that component?
That is such an excellent question. And in fact, for years, since 2013 or 2014, I've been involved in exactly that type of project. Now, the challenge to that, now, just for the listeners, for clarity, oxalic acid is a naturally occurring compound in plants, and it is a defense. The plants use it to defend themselves. So as you select away from oxalates in the plant, you can reduce their levels, but you can also make a plant that has a hard time
living,
defending itself. So that's the challenge there. And people all over the world have been thinking about and trying to do that. I do think we'll eventually succeed with it, but it is a delicate matter because of the sort of natural need for the plant to have these oxalates. So one of the things we've been trying to do is just to create low oxalate versions or select low oxalate types. And that's where we're at right now.
Oh, there you go, Sherry. Thank you very much for calling. Mike in Verona, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hey, how you doing? I had a question about growing buckwheat.
Okay.
And my question is, I'm using it as a cover crop to, I expanded my garden, and it says to, once it flowers, then chop it all down. But I'm wondering, if I'm not using the area, can I just let it reseed itself?
I don't see why not. I mean, I have to say that I consider the vegetables to be my main domain, but I don't see why not. We do have some cover crop experts though on campus who will probably be able to better answer that question. But my sense is that probably it could reseed itself.
Yeah, and then you might have trouble getting rid of it down
that's
the
right.
road.
That's right.
That's the only other thing to consider. Because it'll throw a lot of, I mean, you'll have a lot of buckwheat seed.
Yep.
That's for sure, Mike. Norm in Wausau, your turn. Hi, Norm.
Hi. I got to ask your guest, why is it that this year my muskmelon and watermelon plants that I was growing in containers and I hardened them off appropriately and put them out and they seem to be, most of them are dying. It's almost like you sprayed them with Roundup.
Yeah.
And the squashes, though, are doing fine. They're doing great. But
not the melons.
I don't know the answer to that, but I have seen the same. We've seen transplants like that are just sitting or look like they're shrinking compared to the size they were when they were transplanted. Has the area had a lot of water, a lot of moisture since they've been transplanted?
It has. Unfortunately, yeah. That's probably the major issue, although we're up on a granite hill, so the water doesn't set there, but the soil is really saturated.
Yeah.
Because we've gotten so much rain, and then we had some periods where the temperatures dropped down to 40 or below, and that, you know, in the fall, I know that sometimes we'll just kill them off like you sprayed them.
Right.
Yeah.
I suspect that you already know the reasons, and so hopefully it'll be a little drier and a little warmer for you going forward. Don't lose hope. Keep taking care of them.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. Really appreciate your call, Norm. Thank you so much. What about your research? What are you doing with onions and with carrots a bit more?
Yeah, so with carrots, we are also trying to diversify the varieties that are available. We're working on trying to develop different shapes of carrot. And that's been a big part of our project. So we have a carrot. We have a carrot that's you could hold in your hand. It almost is a V shape or a wedge shape kind of a carrot.
Ah.
So, you know, we're used to eating the baby carrots. And those, of course, are cut from a bigger carrot.
Right.
So and then we have long, thin carrots that we're used to buying in cello type bags. This is a carrot that's more of a yeah, it's kind of a nice size, maybe the size of a sweet potato, kind of chunky. And so that's one of the projects. Another project is to make different colors, make the reds. And we have some carrots that are purple on the outside and orange on the inside. So that's a big, you know, that's a thing we're doing as well.
I love that. And onions?
Onions the same. I've been very interested in the flat cipollini type onion, you know, the really nice, beautiful flat. So
yeah.
I have been trying to breed different shapes of that. And then a big part of our onion program has focused on early maturity. So we want onions that will go down, tops down as quickly as possible to create something that you can harvest early in the season when some of the other early vegetables are ready.
That is great. And you have a lot of grad students and people working with you.
We do. We have a great group. We have 5 graduate students, 2 postdocs, a bunch of undergraduates. In fact, they're out in the field at Hancock right now, thinning beets while I'm here. But yeah, that is the most, I love creating new varieties of vegetables, but probably the best thing that we produce in our program is the trained people that go out and do great things in the world. And it's the most rewarding thing to work with these bright, bright students.
Always a pleasure, Irwin. Thank you so much for spending time with us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Larry.
Irwin Goldman, professor and interim associate dean in the College of Ag and Life Sciences. His department is the Department of Plant and Agroecosystem Sciences at UW. And we will have him back. We'll do this again. It was a lot of fun. Lots of people are involved in this program. It's a team effort. Our producers, Clara Neipert, Joel Patnaud, our technical directors, are Lee Rayburn and Jeff Robbins. Executive directors, Jill Nadeau, and I'm Larry Mueller. Thank you for listening to Garden Talk. Stay with us. Lots more in store.